I try to protect myself. Thank God I react that way. I was trying to calm him down. I don't know what will happen if I try to do something else.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. And you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall as always. We are going to recap the four games from Tuesday, talk a little bit about hashtag NBA fights. We're going to preview the 10 games for Wednesday, and I'm going to shine the player spotlight on Rocket Rodney Hood of the Utah Jazz. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns, who dropped 43 points, including 5 triples, had 6 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 14 of 29 from the field, a perfect 10 of 10 from the line. He's just really on fire. Like, he is absolutely killing it at the moment. Booker is the 21st ranked player over the course of the season, averaging 25, 4.5, and 4.5. They are huge numbers. And then you throw in 2.5 threes, almost a steal a game, 0.3 blocks, and 44 and 88. Now, the 44% on large volume is not ideal for your field goal percentage, but it's not a complete backbreaker. The 42% over the last 10 games is pretty backbreakerish, but if you, like me, are punting field goal percentage in majority of leagues, which is what I do most of the time, then his value rises even further. Those numbers he's putting up are obviously impressive, you know, super impressive. He's gone up an extra 3 points per game as opposed to last season. He's hitting almost a full extra three per game, over one more rebound per game, or over one more assist per game. The only thing that hasn't really changed is his steal and block rates, because they are absolutely identical, but his efficiency has gone from 53 true shooting to 58 true shooting. And if you could just get those steals to 1.2, 1.3, we'd be talking about a potential top 15 fantasy player. He's the 16th ranked player over the last month because those steals are up to 1 per game, and his assists are at 5.9. And we're seeing that real bump in assists since Eric Bledsoe's absence. And yeah, for him to average 6 assists per game or even get to a Jim Harden 7-8 assists level, that sort of thing, I don't think that's a crazy expectation for Booker. Obviously, he was awesome today. He's averaged 8 assists over the past 3 games, tallying 9, 7, and 8. He has really got that ability at the moment. They're going to play him more at point guard with the other point guards there doing nothing. And he is a guy who I thought was going to improve this season. I didn't think he was going to improve this much, but this is the third season. So many players take significant leap forwards in their third year, and Booker is showing that and more, really putting together big, big numbers, and obviously a huge fantasy asset as to whoever drafted him around that pick 40 or pick 50 zone, where he was getting picked in a lot of leagues. Now I'm going to tell you about today's sponsor, and that is the great people at Draft.com. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? Draft is a daily fantasy site, but it doesn't involve salary caps. It's a snake draft format, just like your seasonal leagues. So you go in there against 2 people, against 3 people, against 4 people, and you do a snake draft. You pick one guy, your mate picks one guy, Tom down the road picks another guy, and you go back and forth like that. So you know, computer algorithms and multi-entry lineup formulators aren't going to work on Draft. So you have more of a chance to win on a site like that where it can't be dominated by the high entry players. Draft is an app that's been downloaded by more than 1 million people already. You can play in a real life NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, and that is LOFANTASY. That's right, playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOFANTASY, but it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you'll love it, they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now by using that promo code LOFANTASY. Go and join up and take part in Locked On Draft Wednesdays, where you can join in the specific Locked On leagues, take part against many other Locked On listeners and Locked On hosts across the site as well. It's a different way to play daily fantasy, and it's one that I am sure that you will enjoy. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Bismack Biyombo of the Orlando Magic. 10 points for Bismack, but 16 boards, 2 assists, 1 steal, 5 blocks, 3 of 7 from the field, and 4 of 5 from the line. And one of the biggest surprises from Biyombo here, a guy that was a 53% free throw shooter last year, 63 the year before that, 58 the year before that, is over the last month, he's shooting 81% from the line. So a situation where it was a potential significant negative. And last year, it was a pretty big negative. 53% on 3 attempts per game was a real issue. And it was almost veering into that punt-type territory if you owned him in like 14-team leagues. It would have been an issue. But we're talking about a guy that's taken his overall rate up to 67% this year. And since he's become the starter, for whatever reason, he's hitting his free throws at an elevated rate. He's a great source of rebounds, a great source of blocks, a good field goal percentage source, and he is a top 100 player over that last month with Nikola Vucevic out, so he has to be owned. He could potentially be a top 50 guy until Vuce comes back. Now, he does very little offensively, we know that, but it has been a little bit improved lately. Put together some better performances. In fact, he's gone double digits in the last 3 games, scoring 14, 21, and then 10 today. 7 blocks combined in the last 2 games, and remarkably has 8 assists in those last 3 games as well, something which you don't normally associate with Biyombo. So he is playing now. I've been pretty critical of him. I'm still critical of that contract that the Magic gave him, but he is playing at an elevated level now, and clearly he is a must-own player, which will drop off when Vuce returns at some point, but he is playing very, very well for this team and showing the sort of form that he showed in that playoff series for the Raptors against the Cavs that ended up getting him that $72 million contract and something which completely eluded him last season. The young gun of the night, my boy, Dennis Smith Jr., 25-2-5, a steal, 11 of 18 from the field, 3 of 3 from the line. He is so fast. Just watching him, he's going to be good. Now, I know that I've been hyperbolic at times about players, and I said that this guy's going to be a top 50 post All-Star break guy. It's going to happen. I feel really confident, sort of confident. Over the last 2 weeks, he's the 79th ranked player, playing 31 minutes a night, averaging 17.5 with 3 rebounds, 5.3 assists, and 1.3 steals. Shooting a putrid 50 true shooting. You get that true shooting up to 55 or 56, the scoring jumps to 20, your percentage numbers jump, and you're looking at a top 50 guy. This is a player who has top 20 fantasy upside in year 3 or 4, probably closer to year 4, I would guess. A guy that can average 25 and 7. I think that's a legitimate average with 2.5 threes per game on 42-43%. Look at the numbers that Devin Booker's putting up, and Smith is nowhere near the scorer, so he probably won't average 25 a game like Booker is. But other similar numbers to what Booker's doing in that 20-21 point per game mold with maybe a few more steals and probably a little bit less efficiency and definitely less efficiency on the 3 ball. But he is a guy that could put up similar numbers to that and be a top 20 challenger. This is why I had him number 3 in the draft. It's why I had him at number 3 in Dynasty rookie drafts. Obviously, things have changed quite a bit. You could have Don Mitchell, Jason Tatum, all those guys. Yeah, you're pushing up into that zone. You've got Markel Fultz, who knows what the bloody hell's going on with him. But Smith, I was really happy to take him in a couple of Dynasty rookie drafts, and I'm still really happy with it. He is coming on very, very strongly, and I think it's only going to get better for him. So, shout out to Dennis Smith Jr. The dart of the night, this bloke has racked up these ones. Andy Wiggins, 9-4-4, a block. 4 of 12 from the field, 1 of 2 from the line. We talk about Russell Westbrook's free throw percentage, and we just have to accept that it's going to be bad. You have to do the same with Wiggo. He's shooting 62% this year on 4.3 attempts. That is a negative 2 in terms of Z-score. And once you head past negative 2, that veers into punt territory. It's not quite Dwight Howard. It's not quite, previously Andre Drummond, Mason Plumlee, DeAndre Jordan. It's not quite there. But when you're a negative 2 in a category, finding the right guys to go around that can be a real challenge. It can hamstring your team building strategy. So at this point, if you're not ready to punt free throws, then Wiggins is really, really hard to own. His value is the 157th ranked player this year, which includes that poor free throws. His field goals are bad. He's a positive contributor in steals. He's a positive contributor in points. And that's it. That's the only positive he's giving you. And the fact is he's dropped 6 points per game this season as opposed to last year. He's lost 3.5 field goal attempts per game with the arrival of Jimmy Butler and Jeff Teague. And look, last year he did sneak into the top 90, and he's done that the last 2 seasons, but his ability to become an upper echelon fantasy guy. And he was in a similar situation to Devin Booker, a high 20-point scorer that wasn't doing much in the other areas. But Booker upped his rebounds. He upped his assists significantly. He upped his three-point shooting, whereas Wiggins has just gone backwards in all those areas. So, and if you're in a 10-team league, if you need to drop Andrew Wiggins, it's totally fine. If you're in a 12-team league, I reckon you might even consider it in certain cases there. I probably wouldn't, but you could absolutely consider it, just given how piss poor he has been, and there just doesn't seem to be anything that's going to change with Wiggo this season. It's just, this is pretty much how it is for him, unfortunately. All right, let's get into question time, where you guys ask me a question, basketball related or not, and I answer it. And today's one comes from Issa Cruzen, which I don't think is your real name, on Twitter at DeWoodman. His question is, what is your favorite WWE finisher, as in finishing move? Now, I had quite a few here that I had to pass it down to. This is how I spent my day trying to work this, the answer to this question out. Back when I first started watching the WWE back in 90 or 91, around that time, the move that probably, I guess, captured our imagination the most was it Jake the Snake DDT? Just for its, I guess, its simplicity. The nonchalance of a Jake DDT was, he always just sort of lumbered around the ring like he just couldn't be bothered being there, which was probably the truth given the stuff that's come out about him at the moment. Just, you know, just casually raising the finger and wiggling it to Kemba Mutombo style to the crowd, and then just slopping that DDT onto people. So I was a big DDT fan. Things that can come in sort of, you know, slow build up, quick execution, like a DDT, and RKO is pretty much like that as well from Randy Orton. Big fan of that. But the two that I'd probably put at the top would be the Perfect Plex from Mr. Perfect. Just always enjoyed that. Always enjoyed trying to replicate that at home on the old beanbags, and the Sharpshooter, which leg locks are easily the move that you can attempt to do at home, because you're not, you know, bouncing and throwing bodies around and learning how to fall, because you're already laying on the ground just trying to work out how to lock those legs in. So getting a Sharpshooter on, that was a pretty common occurrence between myself and my brother, that figure fours. But the Sharpshooter, Boston Crab, shit move, Sharpshooter was the one we always tried to get locked in. So I'd say probably the Sharpshooter or the Perfect Plex was my favorite WWE finisher, but the RKO and DDT are right in there as well. So good question, Issa, which again is not your real name. Let's move into these games now. There were four of them that took place on Tuesday. Let's break them down, yeah, with a little bit of extra, value, or what we can get out of these games. The first one we're going to talk about is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Orlando Magic. Just a horrible, horrible loss for the Wolves, to be honest, against the Magic team, who has just struggled. Jim Butler was great, 28-7-4, 5 steals and 2 blocks with 2 triples. A big game from him. While Townsie, 15-12 with 3 blocks, which on the surface looks great. But any game where you go into it and Karl Anthony Towns is fourth on your team in shot attempts, behind Jim Butler, fine. Behind Jeff Teague, behind Taj Gibson, come on. Like these are not, and it wasn't because, and sometimes you can have low field goal attempts because you just get to the line a ton. He took 2 free throws. So fine. He, instead of having 13 field goal attempts, he had 14 field goal attempts. Let's make it that. Still, behind Teague, behind Gibson. And this fact with Towns is just infuriating. And we're starting to go away from that a little bit, but it's coming back now. He averages 4.5 less field goal attempts per game than last season. That's a bigger decline than what Andrew Wiggins has seen. Again, that is a product of a poor offense, which the Wolves have been better, and they've been absolutely rolling, but they can be better. And that's what I want from them. I want them to be better. I want this team success. I want them to be good. And it is frustrating to see Towns just, you know, take a back seat to Teague and to Gibson. And it's why Teague's fine. He's a fine player. I just don't think he fits well with this starting lineup. As for Teague, 13-2-6, yeah, it's totally fine. While Taj had 18-7 in his 38 minutes with 3 steals, continues to hit his shots at a ridiculous rate. I just keep waiting for his field goal percentage to dip, but it just doesn't seem to. It's well above career numbers. At some point it will. I just don't know when that'll be. There was also a weird, weird incident in this game where Aaron Aflalo just lost his shit. Just swung a massive, massive punch at Nemanja Bjelica. I don't know if he quite connected. He would have got him sort of under the chin, in the neck. And Bjelica responded by just casually slapping the old headlock onto Aflalo and holding him there. Both guys got ejected. I have no idea what Bjelica got ejected for. What the hell is he supposed to do as a bloke? Just wildly swings a punch at you for no apparent reason whatsoever. Just bullshit. And I talked yesterday about the John Isaac story and how this team just really, really struggles in terms of, you know, leadership or veterans or any sort of cohesion. And okay, if a Flyer is not there for his basketball ability, because he's terrible, and he's been terrible for 4 to 5 seasons, and if he's not there providing this leadership, and then he goes out there and does this absolute just dick move, just bullshit stuff from a Flalo, this doesn't make him a dirty player, but that was a dog act. If he does it a couple of times, then maybe he becomes a dirty player. But that's just a horrible, horrible thing to do. Like, what is the point of it? It made no sense whatsoever. Bielitsa would have annihilated him. I am guaranteeing you that. But he's a pretty calm bloke. I think Bally would have just destroyed him if he had got real with it. But just calmly popped him in the headlock and just said, just calm down, little man. And that always works well with short people. If you call them little man and grab onto their heads, that's definitely the way to calm them down. But it did happen to work as he stopped the swinging happening. Aflalo is going to cop a multi-game suspension. It's not going to matter in fantasy because he doesn't impact anything. He shouldn't be playing at any stage for any minute on any team. He was still getting like single-digit minutes, but that's going to be on the shelf for, I would guess, at this point, 5 games, but that's just a very early prediction. Aaron Gordon, the three-point percentage, man, it is horrible. 1 of 7, 14 of 7 with a block. He's at under 30% over the last month after starting out scorching. We knew that it wasn't going to continue at that high level, but the same reason now, we also know that it's not going to continue at 22% or 18%, which is what it is over the last 2 weeks. Could it continue at 30? Yeah, because that's what we've seen from him in the future. Could it continue at 35? Yes, but an 18% shooting for the rest of the year is not realistic, much like a 40% three-point percentage at the start of the year was unrealistic. That there's ebbs and flows, and it will reside somewhere in the middle between this 32 to 36 sort of a range, I think. But at the moment, it's just a horrible, horrible, horrible shooting slump. DJ Augustine got hot late. He had 18, 6, and 6. So he played equal minutes to Lord Alfred Payton because he was on a roll. So that's why he got those minutes. And Payton owners obviously get a little bit panicked. I would still be holding him, though. I want to talk a little bit about Kem Birch, who, with Mo Spates out for personal reasons, came in, played the Spates role, played it better than Spates has played it at all this season, really. 12 and 10 in 19 minutes for Birch with 4 blocks. Now, he's a guy that's putting up pretty good numbers in the G League, averaging 2.7 blocks, shooting efficiently, PER of 22, averaging 10 rebounds and 20-odd points in the G League. He's a guy that's bounced around, been playing in Europe for a bit, but back now for the Magic, and many of you wouldn't have heard of him, but with this Magic team going nowhere, with Mo Spates going nowhere, could Birch replace him in the rotation and then become maybe a 16 to 18 team league guy and be one of those guys that comes in and provides, 6 boards and 2 blocks in 15 to 16 minutes, which is really valuable for those deeper leagues. So he is a name to watch. I added him in a 30 team league today after I saw the first quarter of this and he started going off. But there's no guarantee that he's even in the rotation in the next game, or that he continues to do this at all. But many Magic bloggers that I've spoken to or I've seen tweet, they've always bemoaned the fact, why isn't Birch getting minutes? I want to see Kem Birch out there because he has been playing quite well for the Lakeland Magic and they want to see him out there ahead of these bullshit no future guys like Spates. So interesting to see that they've been clamoring for this. It happened and it paid off. So that's something to pay attention to. Evan Fournier had a career high 32 points with 6 triples and 3 assists, while Mario Hezonja had 10 in 18 minutes, continually outplaying John Simmons because he is a better player. Simmons had 4 points with 4 assists in 32 minutes, and he is not a 12-team league guy. I think most of you should be well aware of that by now. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Boston Celtics went to overtime. Tone Davis is an animal. 45 and 16 for Tone. A steal, 2 blocks, big percentages. He's just really, really good. And he's got a chance to be the number one fantasy player, given how well that he is playing at the moment, clearly. Jrue Holiday was good as well, got the game-winning shot in the end, 23, 4, and 7, 3 steals, 3 triples, 1 block on efficient shooting, while Rajon Rondo played 30 minutes, so that's up from where he'd been. But Ian Clark played 32. And they closed the game with Clark in Rondo's spot. The lineup data from Rondo with the starters versus Clark with the starters is just absolutely horrendous. It's massively in favor of Clark, but you look at that line, and that's fine for Rondo from a fantasy point of view. 7, 3, and 8, yeah, love the 8 points, love the 2 steals, love the 2 blocks. That's great for fantasy, but when the on-court product for what Rondo's giving is just disgustingly poor in comparison to some of the other options that are out there, how is he going to be able to maintain 28 minutes a night, which is probably what he needs? in a 10-team league, I don't think that he's a guy to hold. In a 12, it really is quite debatable, and it's hard to get a judge on it, because he'll play 31 night, 31, then he'll play 24, and then he'll have big nights and poor nights, and it is all over the place in terms of what he does. Boog had 19 and 15 with 5 assists and 3 steals, while Clarkey, in his 32 minutes, had 15 and 4. He is not really a pickup, though. Well, Etuan Moore, 4, 6 and 4, and he is a guy that I would leave for the deeper leagues. On to the Celtics, Al Horford, 14, 9 and 6. That's a strong performance. Well, Marcus Smart, over the last month, he is scoring over 10 points per game, and he's shooting over 40%, and that makes him a top 115 player. So if he is on your waiver wire, have a look. Still be aware of the field goal percentage, but 16, 5, and 5, a steal, a block, 3 triples, it's bloody good. And he can rack up those numbers in the other categories. It's just that field goal percentage that is a bother. Kyrie started slow. I think he had just 3 points in the first half, ended with 27, 7, and 2 with 5 triples, while Tatum had 10 and 5, wasn't his best night, and Jaylen Brown 16, 4, and 5 there. They also played more minutes for Bainsey and Vanilla Tice, given the matchup against Boog and Tone Davis, which is something that I spoke about yesterday, so I'd expect both of those guys' minutes to be reduced in the coming games. The Dallas Mavericks and the Denver Nuggets, big win for the Nuggets. They were up big, and then the Mavericks flew home. You really challenged them late and got away with it with a 3-point victory. Heaps of controversy at the end of this game with the Mavericks complaining that they fouled the Nuggets and the refs didn't call it, and then that the 4 or 5 seconds wound off the clock before they were able to get a foul in. And you know I hate fouls. You know I hate late game foul situations and timeouts. And this is why. Now, people who have always been in a basketball environment. I've watched basketball from when I was 10 or 11 years old, but growing up in Melbourne, I grew up in an Australian rules environment, in a footy environment, so not, embedded into a basketball environment. And I could also see things from a logical, well, this is how it's always happened sort of perspective, and want to make things make more sense. But these same players who go around to the ref and say, no, man, I've got a fingernail on him, it should have been a foul, every time, if they're on defense and a player pushes into them and goes for a shot and the ref calls a foul, they put their hands up. Whoa, no, I didn't touch him. It's not a foul. Not a foul, not a foul, not a foul. Even though every single play when you're on defense, you make contact with that player. Every single play. You post a guy up, you're touching him. He goes past you, you contest a shot, you're touching him. You touch the players all the time, yet they every time the person drives into the lane for a layup, there's some sort of contact somewhere. But they got it foul called against them. Oh, what are you doing? No, no way. No foul. No chance. Didn't touch him. No foul. What are you doing, ref? Oh my God, this is terrible. Whoa. At the end of the game, you swipe the back of their jersey and the ref doesn't call a foul and they're up in arms. And that's why I hate it, because a foul is intended to punish. The reason that you put fouls in the game is to penalize a team for breaking the rules. Yet it's used as a positive. So in essence, these players are complaining and they're going up to the ref and saying, come on, ref, can you please punish me? I need to be penalized. And that's just a whole reverse situation of how this thing should work. And that's why the foul, not only is it shit to watch, but it's a shit system where being penalized is a reward. And I think that's dumb. And again, many of you will disagree, but how are they supposed to get back into it? It's just using the rules. And I know it's using the rules. The rules are dumb. The rules are wrong. It shouldn't be that you can go ahead and make the faintest of contact on a late second play that if at any other point at any in the game, if a guy went past you in the lane and you touched the back of their jersey, they wouldn't call a foul, but they do it at the end, even though fouls are supposed to be a penalty. It is just dumb. Seth Curry is going to be out until at least the All-Star break, it appears. So is Dorian Finney-Smith, and Nerlens Noel will be back at some point in February. It doesn't mean that Finney-Smith or Noel are actually going to play, but Curry's the one we're more interested in. He's going to apparently begin practicing at some point in February, so he might not even be playing by the All-Star break. So I don't think there's really any need to hold Seth. We're talking a month to 6 weeks away here at least. He's going to come back slowly. Fantasy playoffs are going to start. There's really no need to be owning Seth Curry at this point, I don't think. The pencil Harrison Barnes, 17 and 6 with 2 steals and a block. With JJ Barea out, Devin Harris had 16 off the bench in his 18 minutes, but there's really no long-term value there because JJ will likely be back for the next game. Speaking of JJ's, JJ Redick from the Philadelphia 76ers has a crack in the top of his fibula. So he will be missing, or he'll be reevaluated in 10 to 14 days. So we're talking about at least 2 weeks with JJ Redick out for the Sixers. And that's going to mean that Jared Bayless is the starter. He played nearly 30 minutes every time that Redick has been out. It also increases the value of TJ McConnell. But neither of them become must-own guys. They can be streamers. I would add TJ over Bayless, but Bayless is the guy that consistently got more minutes in Redick's earlier absences this season. Sorry, the JJ name just triggered me off. Wes Matthews was all right, 10-4-2 with two steals there. While Yogi Ferrell moved to the bench, and this is one of those other things that just, it bothers me as well. I know I just sound like I'm bothered by stuff, but dumb shit annoys me. The Nuggets went in and have been starting this big lineup, and it was dumb. It was a dumb lineup starting Plumlee and Jokic together, but they decided to change it because they were matching up against the Mavericks who go small. So we're going to not, just worry about yourselves half, yeah, most of the time worry about yourself. Worry about, hey, we're playing our best player out of position in Jokic. Maybe we should play him at center and play the best lineup around him, whether that's Trey Lyles, whether that's Baby Neck Wilson Chandler next to him, but not this bullshit Plumlee Jokic lineup. Rather than, we've got to adjust to a terrible team. I use terrible in quotation mark. We've got to adjust to the Mavs because they're going small, so therefore we need to go small. And then, so the Mavs, they come in and go, well, the Nuggets have been playing big. We need to adjust so we can go big. So in the end, the Nuggets trotted out a small lineup when they'd been going big every game, and the Mavericks trotted out a big lineup when they'd been going small every game. So what was the point? In the end, nothing. Because Yogi Ferrell moved to the bench and he played 35 minutes. He'd been playing like 36 starting, so it didn't change much. It just gave some extra minutes to Maxi Kleber, but that's also a factor of JJ Barea being out and having to go big a little bit more, that Kleber didn't do enough to consider him in really any sort of format. Well, Ferrell had 13-2-7, and with that Seth Curry news, he's going to continue to have this back-end 12-team league value as we move forward. On to the Nuggets. As I said, putting Jokic in his best position, turns out it works all right because he's good. In fact,
it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yep. 29-18-7 for Jokic, two steals and a block, and really thrived. And of course, Dr. Malone at the end, people are going to make this out that the reason that Jokic played well is because we started him away from Mason. But, according to matchups, we'll change the line. No, stop being a dickhead. Stop it. Just stop it. Just play him at his best position. He's your best player. Work everything else around him. I don't need Mason Plumlee 25 minutes. I don't need him clogging this bullshit up. Do you know why the people are going to say Jokic played better without Plumlee? Because Jokic plays better without Plumlee. It's not rocket science. And I know you're a doctor, Michael, so you've got a higher qualification than me. But it's not hard. Keep Jokic away from Plumlee. Please. Saw Nathan Lyon in action last night at the cricket, actually, and my son just calling out the middle of the MCG every time he bowls. Nice, Gary. And Gary put on a pretty interesting performance as well. Really, really dominated the Melbourne Stars. For all of you overseas people who are interested in your Big Bash League update, there it is. Gaz Harris was good, though. 25 points, 4 assists, 4 steals, and a block with 3 triples. He has been excellent this season. While Farton Will Barton moved into the starting lineup, had 22-5-6, and he is a guy to own. But we have seen so many times his numbers, his minutes, his value just fluctuate all the time. Baby Neck played 38 minutes. 6-8, 2 assists and 2 steals. He is more of a 14-team league guy. While Trey Lyles, puzzlingly, only 15 minutes. And that's 2 consecutive shit games from him. 3-6-3. I wouldn't have said that he is an absolute must-hold or a must-own guy, given the way that these minutes are going up and down. He'd been playing great. There's no doubt about that. And I would have grabbed him if I had the chance. But he's a guy where I go, well, maybe if there's someone else out there, I will move on. But to me, the lineup makes sense of just putting him in there next to Jokic. And running things, but instead we got extra minutes from Torrey Craig, who'd be DMPCD the last couple of games, and 14 minutes of Malik Beasley, and that didn't really provide a huge amount. Craig was okay defensively, but I'm not sure what the Beasley addition really gave us at the expense of Trey Lyles. The Blue Arrows struggled, 7-3 in his 31. He's going to be inconsistent, that's what we get with young players quite a bit, but overall he's been impressive over the last couple of months. Let's bring up this next, the last game. There it is. The Phoenix Suns and the Portland Trail Blazers. talked about Devin Booker already. Troy Daniels went off, 18 points, all of those coming on threes, six triples there for him. This was a game without TJ Warren. It was a game without Marquese Chris, so Daniels was forced into bigger minutes. Tyler Ulis had 11, 3, and 6 in his 24 minutes, while Isaiah Cannon played 24 as well. They split those minutes, and they are both, you know, 14 to 16 team league guys. Dragan Bender started in place of Chris, 33 minutes, 6 and 8. Yeah, that's a decent performance from him there, but nothing to suggest that he should be owned in 12 or 14 team leagues while Chris is out. Well, Joshie Jackson started, had some foul trouble, had 8 and 2 in his 23 minutes, and had put up some good numbers beforehand, but this is an indication to me that he's not really a 12-team league must-own sort of guy. 23 minutes for Tyson Chandler, 25 minutes for Alex Len, some pretty good numbers for those guys there. Really hard to own either of them in 12-team leagues, though. Well, Greg Monroe, now I keep getting this question. For you, those of you on Basketball Monster, you go in and you use the projections and all that sort of stuff, and you see Greg Monroe pop up because he's projected at 25 minutes per game for the rest of the season and like the 90th ranked player, and people, do I add him? You have to realize that the reason that I've done this, and I've tried explaining it, and people give me downvotes for my explanation. I've got no idea why. The reason Greg Monroe is projected at, you know, as a top 100 player is because he's projected at 25 minutes per game, because he's basically only playing on the games where Tyson Chandler is out, and then he starts and he plays 27 to 32 minutes in those games. So in those 5-6 games that he plays for the rest of the season, then he is going to put up those numbers. But you can't own him in a 12-team league because he's not going to play for the next 3 weeks. He might play two games in the next, you know, month. He's just not going to play. So it's not just about who's the high, and I say this all the time, it's why I don't like to look at rankings or produce lists, because it's never about that. Because on a per game basis, Greg Monroe comes in as a top 100 guy, but it's more nuanced to it, because he's going to play five games maybe for the rest of the year, and that's not worth it. So that is important to pay attention to. On to the Blazers. Yusuf Nurkic played only 7 minutes in the first half, a bit better in the second half as he started it, only 22 overall, 9-7 with a steal and 2 blocks. It really feels like Terry Stotts has just had it with this guy, and that was one of the risks. I labeled him as a risky player heading into the season for two things. Injuries, which he's already had the ankle problem, and just general dickery. Just his mental state, his bitchiness, because he's complaining, his disinterestedness, and that's all coming to the fore now. The fact that the Blazers drafted two big men in the first round this season speaks volumes as to how, yeah, concerned they are about Nurkic as they move forward. And his restricted free agency is going to be very interesting to see how that all pans out as things go forward in the summer. But he was he's still a guy that I would hold at this point, but it is telling the way that his minutes are being reduced. Zachy Collins played 20 and had 5-2, while the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu,
sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
Well, he was pretty good in this one. 14-9 with 4 triples, but we know that those triples come in bunches and then he just does nothing in the other games. He's more of a streamer, perfect streamer for a day like today, but more of a 14-team league guy. Dame had 31-7. CJ had 27 with 6 triples, 3 steals and 2 blocks. And they, of course, once again, carried this Blazers team to the victory. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. And then I'm going to come back, shine that player spotlight on Rocket Rodney Hood. And then we're going to talk about DFS for Wednesday when there are 10 games on. We're going to go with a song by Connecticut today. And that song is called 1234. And then I'll be back to preview DFS stuff. guys, we are back. Thank you to Con Etiquette for their song there. Let's now shine this player spotlight right onto Rocket Rodney Hood of the Utah Jazz. Hood, I think it's fair to say, has been a disappointment this season. He's the 133rd ranked player in fantasy this year. He is averaging 28 minutes per game, 16.4 points per game, which is a full 4 points per game higher than last season. He's hitting 2.7 threes. Again, a strong number. It's just that he does nothing in the other categories. 2.7 rebounds, a reduction from last season. 1.7 assists, so not taking on any extra additional creation role that was left with Gordon Hayward gone. 0.8 steals, that hasn't jumped up. Shooting the same sort of percentage, 41 last year, 40.4 this season. 86% from the line, which is a return to normalcy after a down year last year, and 38% from three. So those, you know, the 38% from three is nice, the free throws are nice, but overall, he's just not contributing in any categories, and really, at this point, he's just a three-point streaming sort of a player. Over the last month, he's outside the top 180, and over the last 2 weeks, he's outside the top 250, as his shot has dropped off, and as I talked about with Aaron Gordon later on, or earlier on, sorry, this is a temporary thing. He's not going to shoot at 35%, which he's done over the last six games. But I wouldn't be expecting him to come in and shoot 47% or anything along those lines. He might do it for a stretch, but we don't need to overrate that. If you're in a 10-team league, I don't think that you necessarily have to hold Rodney Hood. And in a 12-team league, I'd probably think the same thing. It really comes down to, do you need his 16 points? Or maybe you drop it down because he's been a bit poorer lately. Maybe you go to 14 points and two and a half triples. Do you need that? Or do you think you can get that with the Duke Wayne Ellington? I think you can probably get it with the Duke. So I don't think that Rocket is in a great spot. Now, I've been a pretty decent fan of his over the journey, but he has regressed significantly this season. All his advanced stats sort of go in that direction as well. His defensive stuff has dropped off a lot. His box score plus minus is just horrendous at a negative three. The Jazz are 7.7 points better off with him on the bench than him on the court, which is a huge, huge difference. Now, he was a positive in his first 2 years, which is always great for a young player, a plus 3.9 and a plus 1.7. The last 2 years, as he hasn't really evolved his game, as the minutes have gone up and as injuries have impacted him, he has become a negative in that area, and that's not ideal. He's seen his worst two box score plus minus seasons were the last two seasons as well. His PER is at 14, never had an above average PER, and this is the fourth year of his career. He's age 25. The odds of him, when given this opportunity, when you come into the season, like Rocket needs to be our main guy. He needs to be our number one scorer. He needs to be a 20-point per game guy, and he didn't step up, and he didn't take control. Injuries, again, yes, have been a concern for Hood this season, but I just don't think that he is going to be able to develop into much more than what he currently is, and that's probably best suited as a 25-minute bench guy. Think along the lines of a J.R. Smith, maybe, that sort of a player, even though Smith's getting more minutes than that in Cleveland, but that sort of a guy that can come in, bomb some threes, be a Jamal Crawford-y type of guy, especially in terms of fantasy value. I don't have very high hopes for him as he moves forward. With the regression over the last couple of seasons, the fact that he was an older rookie and now he is 25, the injury concerns as well have been an issue with Hood. The emergence of Don Mitchell have impacted him. There's nothing where I go and buy low for him in Dynasty or anything along those lines. I don't look at it that way. I think this is just pretty much who Rodney Hood is at this point, and it's not an overly enticing scenario. So for this season, I look at it and go, I don't think you need to hold on to him. For future years, for Dynasty, I think this is pretty much who he is. Maybe you can stay healthy, but I get the feeling that we're going to have, as things progress, he moves into a 25-minute role. Now, he has had some good games. There's no doubt about that. He's had some decent performances. In fact, his last four games, he's gone 12, 17, 7, 15, and 15 in terms of scoring. Yeah, that's nice. The problem is, it's coming on piss-poor efficiency. He's not doing enough in the other areas. He's had one steal across those five games. He's hitting some threes, but he just doesn't produce enough in those other areas. He does enough scoring-wise to stick in the NBA as that guy, but he's going to be a player that more sticks in the 180 to 220 fantasy range rather than the guy who's in the 60s to 80 sort of zone, which is where we would have hoped he could have jumped up to this season, but obviously, that's just not going to happen. Well, not obviously, because it might. But at this point, the way I look at it, I just don't think it's going to transform that way or it's going to start going that direction for Rocket, which is unfortunate because I do like him. I think he's super talented. And I thought all that potential was there, but I'm losing quite a bit of faith in him at the moment. The perfect DFS lineups for Tuesday on FanDuel, DJ Augustine, 33.2 and Rajon Rondo 32.6.
Nice, Gary!
45. Devin Booker 61.2. Jim Butler 63.5 and Jaylen Brown 28.3. Kem Birch 34.5, Tone Davis 75.2, and Bismack Biyombo 48. On DraftKings, Augustine 35, Booker 63.5, Fournier 41.5, Tone Davis 75, Birch at 34, Gaz Harris at 42, Biyombo 45.5, and Nikola Jokic at 67 for a total of 403.5, and that cost $50,000 dues. Let's move on to this 10-game slate that we've got for Wednesday. The first one of these games, the Washington Wizards and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 1.5, and the total is 212.5 points here. The injuries in this one we need to check up on. Markieff Morris is questionable with an ankle issue, and Frank the Tank Kaminsky has an ankle for Charlotte as well. Let's start with Morris. If he misses, then Kelly Oubre gets a significant bump, while Otto Porter plays the 5. We'll get a little bit more Jason Smith, but Oubre's the guy who I think gets the biggest bump here. Gortat also becomes a little bit more stable. On Charlotte, if Kaminsky misses, then we're looking at a little bit more John O'Brien, but I think it solidifies things for Marv Williams and possibly a little bit for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist as well. Williams is a guy who I do like on this slate regardless, but if Kaminsky's out, it does really tighten that up a bit. Our point guard, Kemba Walker, is at 7,900. He has been solid, 39 average over the last 5, 38 average against the Wizards last 3. That all ties in at a $7,900 price point, so I'm okay with it. I know the John Wall defense is a marginal negative, but I think Kemba's totally fine to consider. As for Johnny, he's at $10,100, and I think getting 50 out of him should be a reasonable expectation as well. You could, in a cash lineup, you could use both Wall and Kemba and find some cheaper options elsewhere to try and get some value, especially in a situation in Detroit where there might be some value opening up. But I think using those that point guard combination is perfectly fine in a cash type situation. Carter Williams and Satoransky, I don't think we need to bother too much with. I like Nick Batum here. 5,600 for Nick. He's averaging 26 over the last 3. The production's starting to come back. I think at that sort of a price, he is worth a look with 35-point upside, probably a 22-23-point floor, I'd say, which is not bad at 5,600. Bradley Beal, on the other hand, is expensive. He's at 8,300. I would only consider him in tournaments, and at that price, I'd probably give him a fade on a slate like this, especially against a Hornets team who has been really, really good at reducing shooting guard production. Jezza Lamb, 4,500. The minutes have been down for him, averaging just 19 over the last 3. 19 points and 19 minutes, that is. You'd need him probably to get to 25 minutes to be a useful option, so you wouldn't want to stack him with Batum. You might want to alternate him in a tournament, but I probably wouldn't. Small forwards, Kidd-Gilchrist, 4,900. The minutes have been up for him, but he just doesn't do enough to excite me. While Otto Porter at 66, I'd say the same about him. No interest there. While Oubre at 46 is that tournament guy. If Markieff Morris is out, I'd lean towards using him in cash, but he can have some value here coming off a strong game in the last one. Power forwards, Marv Williams, 4,400. It does feel risky, yeah, putting your money onto Marv Williams given how shit he was to start the season, but over the last week, 2 weeks, he's been much better. The minutes have been up. He's averaging 30 in the last 3. At 4,400, I feel like that's a strong cash play and also has some tournament upside there. While Morris, I wouldn't be using regardless of his injury. Same with Kaminsky. And Mike Scott at minimum salary. With Markieff out, you could absolutely throw Morris into the mix. If Morris is out, you could absolutely throw Scott into the mix in a tournament, but we wouldn't want to do that for cash. At center, Dwighty, 8,900 for Dwight Howard. He's been putting up, you know, some strong numbers. I just don't like that price for Dwight at all, so that's a fade. Well, Gortat at 54, that strengthens if Markieff is out, but the Howard matchup can be a negative, but I would still consider Marchin only if Markieff happens to be out. Let's go across to DraftKings now. Not much I love in this one. I like Howard a lot more here. I like him quite a bit, actually. 7,600 is a strong cash option. It's a tournament option. The same stuff that I said for Kemba Walker and for Johnny Wall holds true for DraftKings as well. Well, Brad Beal at 7,700 is probably just a little bit overpriced. Batum is also someone I'm not interested in on DraftKings in comparison to FanDuel. I like Gortat, I like Oubre in that situation that Morris is sidelined. Let's go on to the next one. We've got the San Antonio Spurs and the Brooklyn Nets. Pau Gasol is questionable with a wrist sprain. We are dealing with Kawhi coming back. We know Manu's out and D'Angelo Russell is out for Brooklyn. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie at 6,100 has been a little bit underwhelming in a couple of games recently, but I still think at 6,100 you can use him. I'd lean a little bit cautiously on him, just given the nature of the Spurs' defense against point guards and his up-and-down play of late, but I still think that he's a solid option here. DeJounte Murray at 39, with everyone back bar Manu, he's a tough sell. Tone Parker at 42. A good game from Tone in the last one, maybe, but I don't, especially the matchup, that's the thing that's maybe making me look at Tone. I'm not a massive fan of the 4,200 price tag on FanDuel, but it's not a complete write-off. Caris LeVert's at 55. I feel pretty good about that. Even on the nights where he shoots poorly, like last game, he still put up 30 points in 30 minutes, and at 5,500, that is perfectly fine with me, so I'm in on him. Dan Green's at 41. Nothing too exciting there. I don't really love that. Small forward, I love this. Damari Carroll, 5,000. Really cranking at the moment, averaging 35 in his last three, 29 in his last five. Absolutely fine with that at 5,000, while the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 4,500, he is only a tournament guy. Kawhi, at 8,900, remarkably, he is killing that value, averaging 48 over the last three in only 29 minutes. It's a drop in price. FanDuel's dropped him, despite him having 47 in the last game. He's playing around 30. The Nets defense, not a real challenge. I think that this is, it's one to explore. I don't really feel confident in going Kawhi cash just at this point. 4,900 for Kyle Anderson's not really interesting with Kawhi playing. At power forward, Rondé's at $7,000. I don't mind that. I think there's some upside there. You can use it in cash, but I'm not totally enamored by it. While LaMarcus at 8,700, still fading him with Kawhi back in action. Davis Bertans, 37, who's had a couple of decent games, but with everyone healthy, he's a little bit harder to rely upon. At center, Gasol, $6,000. We've seen centers against the Nets go bananas, but he is dealing with this wrist issue. In a tournament, that would be it for Powell, but he's probably going to be a fade. While Tyler Zeller, Jahlil Okafor, and Jarrett Allen, I don't think they really deserve too much of your attention. On DraftKings, it's Hollis Jefferson at 61, which I think comes in really strong, while LeVert at 54 is also in a good spot. Kawhi at 87, same for FanDuel. LaMarcus at 82, still somewhat of a fade to me, while Dinwiddie at 65, I think, is a fade there also. Let's move ahead to the next one. We have got, who have we got? We've got the New Orleans Pelicans coming off a back-to-back. They are taking on the Atlanta Hawks. No spread currently released at this point. The Hawks have got their standard injury report where everyone's probable. Mike Muscala, Marco Bellinelli, Taurean Prince, and Dwayne the Undertaker Deadman. They are all probable, so they will all play at point guard. Rondo, 5,700. Absolutely no interest in him whatsoever. Well, Dennis Schroeder's at 7,800. He has been putting up big numbers, averaging 39 over his last five, Schroeder, but that price is a little bit prohibitive. I don't think it's totally prohibitive. I think that he is a tournament type 45-point upside guy, which is interesting at that price, but I probably wouldn't go him in cash. Ian Clark at 36 had his big game today. Unlikely that he goes back-to-back with those, so I think he's someone to stay clear of. Kent Bazemore at 57, just constantly cranking out the same minutes and the same numbers pretty much every game. It's a positive matchup. I'd be in on using Kent here. Drew Holiday at 7,800, also putting out consistently good numbers. But that's a big investment. There's probably going to be better options at shooting guard, but he's not a guy to completely shy away from. At small forward, Etuan Moore, 5,300, no way for me. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, he will have very, very low ownership because he has been poor the last couple of games. But as I detailed maybe 2 days ago on the podcast, the two games before that were really, really strong. So at 5,700, I like his tournament upside here, and his ownership will be low. At power forward, the Baptist, John Collins, had 25 points in 22 minutes against the Spurs, foul-plagued minutes. He is at 5,000. The concern here, I guess, is the front court matchup, the Boogie Tone Davis front court. 5,000 for the Baptist, though. He can comfortably go over that, so he is a tournament guy, and I still like him as a tournament guy. Tone Davis, 11,700. I don't care that the price is up. I'm still all about that action there. While Ilya Sova at 5,200, I think that he's not a bad cash play. He's just getting consistent numbers and fairly consistent production. Boog is at 11,900. I like him. I like Davis more, but I still like Cousins here. It's a great, great matchup for him. While the other side of things is the Undertaker at 5,100. He put up a big line in that last game, 31 points. But I am a little bit concerned against Cousins as he returns from injury. Maybe a tournament for the Undertaker, but probably someone I would steer clear of. On to DraftKings. much the same. Tone Davis at 10-5 is a great play. Boog at 10-8 is a sensational play. Schroeder at 7-5 is okay, not as good as Fangio, I don't think. Drew at 6,700 is almost lockable, while the artist formerly known as Torian Prince at 4,900, I'm happy to jump back on that horse. I like Kent Bazemore at 55 there also, while the Baptist at 4,700, not as appealing as what he is over on Fangio. All right, let's go on to the next one now, to the Detroit Pistons and the Toronto Raptors. I talked about Detroit earlier as potentially having a fair bit of value opening up, and that's because Stan Johnson, Avery Bradley, and Luke Kennard are all questionable, and these are wings. These are guys playing the two and the three, and if all of those miss, or if two of those miss, then some of these guys are going to have to play a ton of minutes. Reggie Bullock is a name who springs to mind. You might see some Ish Smith, Dwight Bikes backcourts. You might see Langston Galloway actually get back into the rotation. You might see two-way guy Reggie Hearn play. There's a number of different things that the Pistons will be forced to do if all of these guys happen to be out. So there's going to be some opportunity potentially opening up there. For the Raptors, you've got Freddie Van Vliet, who's questionable with that knee contusion that caused him to miss the last game. But with Kyle Lowry back, his impact is going to be minimal anyway. Lowry is at $8,000 on FanDuel. That's not super appealing to me. The Pistons have been pretty relaxed in terms of allowing point guards to score recently, but Lowry is more of a GPP guy at that sort of a price, while DeLon Wright at $4,900 is, again, more of a tournament guy. Went off in the last game, but at that price, I'm not feeling super great about that. Ish Smith at $6,100. Two of those guys out, I'm all about Ish at $6,100, because he'll have to take on a bigger load, especially if Avery is out, and I think he can really crush that value there. Bikes at $3,700. He'd be an interesting tournament guy if they play him next to Ish, because everyone is gone. That could really open up some value there. As for DeMar DeRozan, $9,100. Hasn't really been cracking into that value much recently. Tournaments only, I don't feel strong about him in cash. Well, Avery Bradley at $5,400. The uncertainty with whether he can actually hit a shot remains a problem. Luke Kennard would be a guy I'd watch if Johnson and Bradley are out. $3,700 for Lukey would be interesting. At small forward, Reggie Bullock, $4,000. He had 34 in the last game. It's always highly dependent on his shooting, but I think at $4,000, with the question marks, he is someone that you absolutely do have to pay attention to and have in your player pool. CJ Miles, Stan Johnson, the Jedi Oji Anunoby, I don't see much there. Serge Ibaka, $6,300 for Serge. Good matchup for him. The Pistons and power forwards have been a positive lately. I'm not super interested in him at $6,300, though. Siakam played more minutes than Ibaka in that last game, but I don't think that's a sustainable model. While Toby Harris at $6,300, I don't mind that for cash. I think there's limited upside there for Harris, but not a cash play. At center, who knows what Dwayne Casey's going to do? Jonas Valanciunas has done well against Detroit multiple times. He's at $5,500, so I think he's absolutely worth a tournament look. We've seen him in limited minutes put up big lines recently. It's just the minutes have been the real problem. While Jakob Poeltl at $4,200, does he get 25? Does he get 15? Does he get 8? Because that's all been realistic possibilities for him in the past week or 2 weeks. So he could be all over the place, but that makes him a tournament guy. While Andre Drummond at 10-1, no interest at that price, just too expensive. Sorry, mate. And I like Drummond. That is just too expensive. On DraftKings, Drummond at $8,800. Way better. Much more interesting. But that's more of a tournament guy than a cash one, but it still has some interest there. I think Kyle Lowry and Serge are in a much better spot on DraftKings as well. You can absolutely use them. Toby Harris, a similar guy. While I love Ish Smith at $5,800, especially with those uncertainties as we talked about earlier. Let's move on to the next one. It's the New York Knicks. It's the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizz are favored by 2, and the total is 203 points here. Tim Hardaway missed the last game due to a back-to-back as his return from injury, so he should be ready to go. For Memphis, we've got Chandler Parsons out, Mike Conley is out, and Jim Ennis is listed as questionable. If Ennis is out and Parsons is out, as we already know, then the wing minutes there, man. Andy Harrison, Dylan Brooks. You might see Ben McLemore back in. Do you see a two-way guy? I think it's Mike Henry that they've recently signed. Does he come in and play some minutes? There's some real issues there in terms of depth on the wing there for Memphis as well, much like Detroit, but probably less favorable. At point guard, Mario Chalmers is at $3,700. I don't know why they're continuing to play him. He's not providing anything. I have no interest in him in DFS. Well, Andy Harrison, $5,500 next to Andrew Harrison's name is just a joke. There's no, you don't want to spend that, I don't think. What do we make of Frankie Ntilikina? He had 40 points in the last game, but we've seen this multiple times from Jeff Hornacek.
My name is Jeff.
And what, he plays him 28 minutes and then he plays him 17 minutes. and he plays well in the big minutes and then gets benched inexplicably. But at 3,600, near minimum for a guy that could play 30 minutes and put up 40 points, that's someone you absolutely have to consider. Jarrett Jack had been playing 33 minutes a night and putting up good numbers, and then he played 13 minutes. So working out what Hornacek's going to do there, it's quite a tough thing, and you wouldn't want to use either of these guys in cash, but you'd put Neil Aquina into that tournament pool, and you could even put Jarrett in there at 5,500. But I do doubt that he's able to maintain the level of production we saw in those earlier games. Tyreek's at 8,400, one of the safest bets out there, I think. Strong for cash, good tournament value. While Courtney Lee at 5,700, the value has dissipated with Timmy Hardaway back. I'm not really interested in the king of cash as he was earlier on. At small forward, Jim Ennis, 3,700. If he plays, then I think there's great value there. I love that if he plays. If he's out, of course, that's a tougher thing to swallow. Well, Dylan Brooks at 3,700 played well in the last game, but that had been a long time coming. Mick Beasley, 5,400. I don't want anything to do with Bees with Hardaway back. We saw him play such limited minutes in those games where Timmy had returned. At power forward, Jermichael Green at 4,800. No. Kristaps at 9,100.
Percentages.
Maybe. I think a tournament. I'm not feeling strongly confident with him in cash. But in saying that, his lowest score in his last five games has been 40 points, which is a pretty bloody good floor. The problem you have here is the Memphis big man defense and the lower pace can impact him, but he's still an okay guy. And if you want to use him in cash, I don't think it's the wrong decision. Jarrell Martin, not really happening. Deontay Davis went big in that last game. 3,600, had 30 points due to him coming and getting blocks. He's outplaying Brandon Wright. Wright's out of the rotation, but he's obviously not a guy we can rely upon. We can rely on Marc Gasol to get minutes. He's at 8,500. I'm not sure I'm going to rely upon him to put up those sort of numbers, though, that's equivalent to that salary. So he's probably a fade for me. Well, Enes Kanter, much like Neil Aquina, his minutes are all over the place. So he's a strong, strong fade there for me. Cock is always a GPP guy, because we know that if he gets an inexplicable 25 minutes, then the numbers will follow. On DraftKings, really no one who stands out as an awesome play here. Courtney Lee at 47, you could make an argument for. I won't. The same sort of stuff we'll throw out there. Timmy Hardaway at 59 is probably a little bit expensive. He's a little bit too expensive on FanDuel as well. You got Tyreek at 85 again. Maybe a touch expensive on DraftKings, but not horrendous. Porzingis at 8,000 is probably the cashiest guy here, while Gasol at 78 has some value, and the point guard mess in New York remains an issue, regardless of what site you're playing on. The next game we'll look at is the Miami Heat. They are traveling to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 4. The total is 203 points. Tyler Johnson is doubtful, not getting an MRI on that ankle/knee injury, which I know is an ankle, but I keep calling it a knee because he just doesn't know what parts of his body are hurt, apparently. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, 7,100. Love that. He is absolutely killing it at the moment. All aboard using the iron shoulder here. Well, Eric Bledsoe at 7,300 really bounced back in his last game. Now, the Heat are one of the worst teams for opposition point guards to go up against. So that gives me an element of pause. And I would take Dragic over Bledsoe. But Bledsoe and Dragic going up head-to-head against each other, former teammates in Phoenix, is, I guess, equivalent to a John Wall, Kemba Walker point guard stack game stack situation that I referenced earlier. So I think that Bledsoe and Dragic can be used together. At shooting guard, the Jukes at 4,900. Wayne Ellington, he's a tournament guy, while Chrissy Middleton's at 73. Not really producing the value that I'd need for Chris, so he's, I guess, somewhat of a fade target. Brogo, lots of minutes for Malcolm Brogdon, $6,000. I don't like that price for him, though, so I think that his upside's capped by that, and I think that takes away a bit of his floor, so no bueno for me. At small forward, Justice Winslow, 3,800. With Tyler Johnson potentially out, Justice could be getting more minutes. He is a guy that's a little bit unpredictable in what he can do fantasy-wise. He's a GPP guy, but that's probably about it. While Adetokounmpo's at 11,600. I know he had 63 in that last game, and that's great, but I think that he is a fade option here with some other high-priced guys that I would prefer. Joshy Richardson at 58, that's locked that in. That's a cash option all the time. At power forward, the Muppet, John Henson, 5,500. Probably not in this matchup. Kelly Linick, 4,400. Big game in the last one. Two turds before that, so a tournament at best. And then you've got Jimmy Johnson at 5,300, who has been well down in his production the last couple of games. But I think there's a sneaky tournament chance here for Jim to go out there and really put together a big one. So throw him into your tournaments, I reckon. Bam's at 4,300. Bam out of bio. I don't like too much there. While Hassan Whiteside at 7,600, we know the minutes are going to be down. The Bucks can go small. That could really limit Hassan. That is a fairly strong fade situation to me. On to DraftKings. Dragic, the Iron Shoulder, 7,600. I like that a lot. Brogo's at 52. Way better than on FanDuel, so interested there. Well, 10-3 for Adetokounmpo is also super strong, and that has way more appeal than what his price value looks like over on FanDuel. Whiteside, again, tough to use. Bledsoe at 7,000, not bad. Joshy Richardson at 6,200 is not as appealing as FanDuel, so not someone that I'm super interested in. Let's move on to the next game. We're going to talk about the Lakers, and we're going to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Lonzo Ball is doubtful. Brandon Ingram is probable, while Larry Nance Jr. is dealing with a hip pointer. He is questionable. So we're assuming Ingram plays. We're assuming Lonzo is out, and Nancy is sitting there at the questionable tag, so we don't know if he is going to be in or not. At point guard, Russ, $12,000. So many other options out there. It's a good matchup for Russ, but so many other options out there that at 12,000, I think that he is going to be someone I would fade. Tyler Ennis, who will likely get the start for the Lakers again. He's a minimum salary guy, so absolutely he can be considered a tournament player. I wouldn't be really relying on him in cash because they did use 3-point guards. They used the Mitten, Gary Payton II, and they used Alex Caruso as well. But Ennis started, and they used, of course, Jordan Clarkson, and he was shit as per usual. Shooting guards. Caldwell Pope, 5,600. He really took on that extra load with Ingram out in the last game. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen again, but he has 40-point upside, so that should give you some tournament value. Well, Jordy Clarkson is down to 3,900, and he's not even really getting close to that, but I still would consider him a tournament guy. It's not outrageous to think that he can drop 40, but it's also not expected. Josh the Hitman Hart, a minimum salary guy with Ingram back, unlikely that he can return enough value to be interesting. While Terry Ferguson will start with Andre Robertson ruled out at this point. He's been listed as out Robertson, so I've got him as doubtful, but at this point it doesn't look like he'll play, and I don't think you should play Terry Ferguson. At small forward, Ingram's at 6,600, a really tough matchup with either Paul George on him. I don't think we want to look too closely at Ingram there. As for George, 8,300 against his future team. Can he put up some decent numbers? I think that a 40 burger is a huge possibility for George, so that makes him a cash option. It makes him a tournament guy also. At power forward, Larry Nance has put together two strong games out of his last three. He's at 4,800. I think there's a tournament play there if he's fine with his hip, but otherwise not really keen. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma's also turned it around. If Nance is out, 5,900 for Kuzma is a strong cash option, I believe. Mallow's at 64, and he's been playing much better recently, but I'm not really falling for that. At center, Brook Lopez, 4,100, fade. Steve-O Adams, 6,900. Like what Adams can do, I think that's probably a little bit high, so I'm probably going to pass there. Well, Julius Randle's at 65, and that's expensive for Rando, but if Nance is out, he's going to have to be forced into 30 minutes, and he should be able to get enough playing time to get a 35-pointer, so I think he could be valuable if Nance is out, so that makes him somewhat of a tournament guy to me. On DraftKings, Westbrook at 11,600 enters the fray a little bit more, but only for GPPs, while Randle at 6,100 is interesting. Paulie George at 75, I like. Steve-O Adams, Kyle Kuzma, 59. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, very similar sort of stuff to FanDuel. Jordy Clarkson at 48, I don't even think I'd throw him into a tournament at that. Ennis at 37 is your tournament guy as the projected starter, with Lonzo Ball doubtful. The next game we'll take a look at, the Golden State Warriors, the Chicago Bulls. Draymond Green is questionable. Andre Iguodala is questionable. Is this Steve Kerr just saying, we're laying the foundations for a Draymond Green absence so that Jordan Bell can start in Chicago and rub it in their face? I wouldn't be shocked. So, Jordan Bell becomes a tournament. Now, Bell might not even play in this game at all. But in a GPP option where he could come out and play 26 minutes and have 12-7 with 3 steals and 4 blocks, he could smash his value. And the nature of the listing of questionable as Golden State heads back to Chicago, it is really, really intriguing. So just pay a little bit of attention to that. I think there might be something in it. Steph Curry is at 9,800. He has been playing very, very well. That's a price drop to under 10,000, so I think you should be taking advantage of that. Well, Chrissy Dunn at 7,800. That's more of a tournament. I think it's too expensive to use Dunn in cash there. Clay's at 73, and I don't want anything to do with that. Justin Holiday at 52 has been really strong on the back of some super unsustainably hot shooting, but he is a tournament sort of guy who is getting minutes until Levine gets back into it. Zaki's at 4,100. I actually don't mind Levine at 4,100. In the two games that he's played, he's put up big performances. He has smashed through that value, 37 in the last game. At 4,100, I think that that's absolutely worth looking at for Zach Levine. Denzel the Hammer Valentine, 4,400. That's a fade. Nwaba at 37. Omri Caspi, no. But Kevin Durant at 10.6. He's the small forward that you want, and I'm really keen on locking him in. I think that's a really strong cash play. At power forward, Green's at 8,200. I'd be okay with using him if he's ready to go. I think there's some value there. While Punchbob Shiploke at 3,900. A little bit of blowout potential here, and we know what Punchbob does in those situations, so I think that he is a GPP option here. Also, the Bulls could go a little bit smaller, as the Warriors do. Limit Robin Lopez's minutes and play Punchbob at center a bit. So at 3,900, he absolutely enters the tournament mix. Lauri Markkanen's at 6,400. I'm not certain here. I think with Mirotić still around, there's just a bit of a cap there that does scare me off somewhat. While Mirotić at 5,900, I'm not feeling super strongly about him either. At center, no. Zaza and Robin Lopez, no thanks. DraftKings. I don't like the prices here. Steph's at 10.4, Durant's at 10.6. They're fine, but they're too expensive given some of the other value out there. I don't like it. Chris Dunn at 7,100 is interesting, and I'd be more on board with him. Mirotić, Markkanen, no. Justin Holiday at 52, I think, has some upside here, even as a cash play. And Punchbob at 45, that takes away some of the intrigue of him as well. So this game does not look as sexy as what it does on FanDuel. But of course, that Jordan Bell mini conspiracy theory, and I don't mean conspiracy theory in the true sense of the word, but I think that could have some relevance. Utah and Sacramento. The Jazz are favored by 4. The total is 203 points here. Scalabissier is questionable for the Sacramento Kings. And you know what else is questionable? The entirety of their rotation. I have absolutely zero idea what is going to happen because 2 to 3 veterans are going to sit out. Will it be Zach Randolph who sat out the last game? Will it be George Hill who moved to the bench? Will it be Vince Carter who missed the last game? Will it be Kosta Koufos? Will it be Garrett Temple who started and played 17 minutes? How will it go? I have absolutely no idea. Playing any Kings guys in cash until we have confirmation of their lineups and who is out is pretty much impossible, with the exception of Bogdan Bogdanovic and Willie Cauley-Stein. Yeah, guys like Budrick Hield, Georgios Papagiannis, who might get a boost, of Justin Jackson. These guys could all have value at some point, but we don't know when that value is going to appear. Fox, Bogdanovic, Cauley-Stein are the guys who I think you can feel a decent level of confidence with, and that's about it. Ravishing Rick Rubio is at 5,200. He has torn apart Sacramento in the past. That hasn't really been his MO this season, but he is worth looking at a GPP type of a situation. Well, De'Aaron Fox at 6,200. Sorry, De'Aaron, too expensive. Georgie Hill, no way. Shooting guard Budrick, 4,900. He played 28 and scored 28 in the last game, so I like his tournament upside here, but the slower pace of this game and the Jazz defense does give me pause for cash. While the Don Mitchell at 8,100, sorry Donnie, but that is probably just a little bit too high for cash, but there is something there for tournaments. I love Bogdan at 51. That's a strong, strong cash play. Really, really dig that. While Rocket at 56, we already talked about Hood before and I don't really like that. Jingling Joe's at 57, not getting much done at the moment, Joe, so he's a fade type guy here. Power forward Derek Favors, 6,900, probably not one that I'm super interested in at this stage. Labissiere at 55, started, played 28 minutes, but didn't really produce much. And at that salary, it's not an overly exciting situation. Center, I like Cauley-Stein, 6,900 for Will. He put up 33 in that last game. And I do think that there is some value there in Cauley-Stein at that sort of a salary. And Udo and Papagiannis, I don't think we need to get too involved with those guys. On DraftKings, the Don, 7,300 in. Willie Cauley-Stein, 62 in. De'Aaron Fox, 51, as in as I can get. Labissiere at 4,300, tournament play. Budrick at 46, super strong tournament play. Bogdan at 52, lock it in for cash. There is some value that opens up on DraftKings for this game, quite a bit of it, in fact. All right. Let's get into the last game of the night. It's Denver, and it's the LA Clippers. No spread for this one at this point. The Nuggets just coming off that back-to-back. DeAndre Jordan was ruled out by Doc Rivers, and then the official report came down saying he is questionable. If he is out, then the table Montrezl Harrell and Willie Reed becomes options. You look at Harrell a little bit more than Reed. The Clippers involved in that weird incident with the Rockets. I don't imagine many of the Clippers guys, if any of them, are going to be subject to any suspensions or anything like that. It's more going to be Houston, which we'll talk about on tomorrow's show. At point guard, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 6,700. Tournaments only. Milos at 5,100. Teodosic. Good game for Milos in that last one against the Rockets, but still, I'm not feeling super strong about him, but he could be a tournament sort of guy. We saw Dennis Smith put up some good numbers against the Nugs today. Juwan Evans, probably not. At shooting guard, Fartin Will Barton, 6,800. I like him in this role. Big minutes could ensue. It's a really good matchup for him. I think he is a tournament guy, not really a cash guy, while the list manager, Ty Wallace, at 4,300. The minutes are there for him. Not much is going to change in that regard. He is worth a look in cash and in tournaments, while Gaz Harris at 6,900 is constantly just putting up consistent numbers. His tournament value is maybe a little bit lower, but his cash value is pretty high, as is Lou Williams. But Lou is now at 8,900. That is obviously a very, very high price for Williams, but he is delivering nearly every time he's out there. So it's really, he is hard to go away from at this point for guaranteed production. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler is at 45. I don't really care about that. Wes Johnson at 4,000 was a monster. Defensive numbers, rebounds. He's a tournament sort of a guy. Power forwards, Blake Griffin's at 8,700. I'm in on Blake at 8,700. I think there is value there for cash and in tournaments. At center, Jokic at 9,700. Yeah, really big game from him today. I imagine he can get close to that again. He's not the best player on the board, so he's not a lock for cash or tournaments, but he's not a horrendous option. While Jordan at 8,800 is probably a fade on the Dickey ankle, while Mason Plumlee is a fade because he is not that good. On DraftKings for tournaments, I like the Blue Arrow at 57 and Jokic at 89. And for cash, it's Barton at 55 and Gazza at 6,000, some value there. Lou Williams at 87, still a strong play as well. Well, Blake at 9,000, probably in fade territory for me on DraftKings. Let's just wrap it up by going to the other sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, or for tournaments only, we're looking at Labissiere, Valanciunas, Teodosic, Oubre, Justice Winslow, Reggie Bullock, Tyler Ennis. There's some tournament options. And for cash and tournaments, we're looking at Tone Parker, Jakob Poeltl, Dan Green, Marvin Williams, the list manager, Ty Wallace, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Budrick Hield, Malcolm Brogdon, De'Aaron Fox, Caris LeVert, Nick Jokic, Lou Williams, and Tone Davis. On Moneyball for tournaments, it's Yanni, Julius Randle, Stephen Adams, Skull Labissiere, the Muppet John Henson, Budrick Hield, the Baptist John Collins, Kelly Oubre Jr., Dan Green. And for cash, Marvin Williams, the list manager, Ty Wallace, Justin Holiday, Damari Carroll, Kent Bazemore, Malcolm Brogdon, Nick Batum, LeVert, Hardaway, Corley Stein, Favors, Schroeder, Don Mitchell, Tone Davis, and Boog Cousins. And on DraftStars for tournaments, Don Mitchell, Julius Randle, Jamal Murray, Joe Ingles, Skal Labissiere, Budrick Hield, Trey Lyles, Joe Johnson. And for cash, I've got Marvin Williams, the Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabb, the Duke Wayne Ellington, the artist formerly known as Torian Prince, Brogdon, De'Aaron Fox, Caris LeVert, Serge Ibaka, Fartin Will Barton, Drew Holiday, the Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, Lou Williams, and Boog Cousins. If you are listening to this podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it's now called, go and leave a 5-star review. And you can also find this show on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Check out the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net and Basketball Monster at Bask Monster. And check out LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com as the home for all of these podcasts. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Nemanja Bjelica.